Colorado. Here we go. Y'all ready for this? The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. Our law firm is Bell and Pollock. We are injury attorneys. We formed our law firm in 1984 with a vision and mission of helping injured victims. Over the years, Brad and I saw many, many times, many, many instances, many, many clients who didn't really have a level playing field because they didn't have the information. So that's one of the reasons we do all of our radio shows. And this show, it dawned on us that people just didn't have a place to go. There was no forum, public forum, that they could call an attorney. And some people don't want to talk to an attorney. They think they're going to get charged if they talk to an attorney. They think it's terrifying to talk to an attorney. I can see some why some witnesses might think that, but because we're going to get to the truth on the whole matter. But you got a place to call right here, right now, 303-713-8255. That's 713-8255. We're here for you every week. Even though we're injury attorneys, this is a show for any legal subject. It doesn't matter. We're going to help you with your problem and questions. 303-713-8255. Join us live right now on KHOW. It's Don from Morrison. Good morning, Don.
Morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. What can we do for you?
Inquiring about the realistic possible outcomes on a class action lawsuit. We've only heard about them. Don't know much, beginning to understand more. And I'm kind of getting this read that if you have a complaint and you don't think you can get satisfaction individually, you might carry a big stick with the idea of a class action nationwide. I'm told that the attorneys, if they were willing to take the case, might do handsomely for themselves financially, and that the individual representing the class, in this case me, might just get a little or virtually nothing out of it. Not even bragging rights, I would call it, because you may have results squashed. So I wondered, what's the motivation to go through with it? There you go. That might be my question.
That's a great question. Incredible question. You woke us up here, Don. All right, ready to go. So most of what you said is absolutely true. The people that complain about class action lawsuits or analyze them say, well, the attorneys win all the money. Nobody else wins any money. And so many times that's true. So let's break it down to its components, and then everybody can make up their own mind. You have been wronged somehow, some way, by a service, product, whatever, that involves a lot of people, even across the state or across the nation. And so if you were damaged in the amount of $69 on something, $43, $12, it's not worth it, and the companies know it, and so they don't care, and so they're going to keep repeating behavior. And so this is kind of the pros and cons of it. So then the attorneys bring a class action lawsuit, and there's enough people, it's certified by a class, by a district court judge, has to be certified, then bring a class action lawsuit, and so the lawyers are going to get attorney's fees a lot. I mean, let's say they recover $50 million across the United States. They're going to get a lot, and then the individual person like you is not going to get a lot. So that's the one argument. The other argument is, well, that's the only way to make the companies or the people providing the product or service that's defective or harmed people stand up and learn justice. So it depends. What you say is right.
Yeah, class action lawsuits have their place. A lot of times it's recognizing the numbers. If I'm a company and I'm cheating somebody, or if I'm doing something wrong and I'm making an extra $50 per person doing that, but I'm doing that to, let's say, 1,000 people, now I've just made $50,000. And if I'm doing it to 10,000 or to millions, I've made millions of dollars. Now, how do I stop that? As an attorneys, we look and we say, how do you stop that? Well, we take somebody like you who may say, look, I'm willing to have my name and the fact that I was cheated used to be the example or to be the lead person. Usually it's a group of plaintiffs. And then certain requirements are required to meet in the federal courts to be able to say class action is appropriate. You have to show that there are so many potential claimants that it's impractical to join them all in one lawsuit. That you have to, you must say, show there are common questions of law or fact across all the cases. The named plaintiffs have the same claims as all other people that are going to be involved. And then, you know, you have to put together the class and be certified by the court to have a class to stop the minor cheating or the cheating that's happening from a company or from an entity that's a minor amount per person but is huge profits to that company. Can be huge profits.
So in this case, it's more than $69 that individuals will be affected, probably more like in the thousands individually. But how does the attorneys find out through discovery, I've heard, is the word used, that the corporation has to hand over all of a certain records that they have with their customers so that they could be contacted to find out if they have been wronged? Is that how this class is built?
Excuse me, you're right on the money, Don. You got some great questions and great insight into the whole thing. So, yes, somebody starts to complain, they go to an attorney, there's two people, one person, five people, about a product, service, and they got cheated on, et cetera. So then it can't just automatically happen. Then there has to be an action filed, and then there has to be a court that certifies that this is a legitimate class of people. And so there has to be, there's stepping stones in between. The court has to say this is a legitimate class, so then now you can move forward. And then to answer your question, yes, discovery. Who bought this product, Mr. and Mrs. Company? Or what happened with this? Who are the people, the contact people? And then they get contacted. And that's where you get sometimes those postcards. You want to be part of the class or not? You know what I mean?
Yeah, we've seen the cell phone thing where you get 59 minutes out of it, and
right.
The attorney's got millions.
Right.
So I'm in the situation there where we've spoken before, and you are injury law attorneys,
right.
Not class action lawyers. You have your specialty, right?
Right, correct.
Okay, well, that was something I wanted to ascertain for sure, that that's not your bailiwick there. But
no, we don't do class action lawsuits, no.
Well, and let's go through it. You know, the one, for instance, the tobacco settlements, those were class action lawsuits. Even the injuries that were caused through the use of the tobacco and the tobacco settlements without education of what it was, those caused huge damages to people. And you might say, an individual, why couldn't an individual bring that lawsuit? Well, to go against the tobacco industry is a huge amount of work. And when you see, okay, the tobacco settlement ends out in about $200 billion and you have all this money flying around, you probably have a creditors committee, and then you have a group of lawyers that the lawyers may total hundreds that are sharing in that pot. Now, they're still making a lot of money, but, you know, you're talking about an extreme amount of work. You know, you can go down through it. You can do it through the Volkswagen emissions scandal and the Enron scandal. And, you know, I'm thinking of some of that were going on. One that I had personal experience in, because I represented about 40 or 50 women, were the silicone implant, breast implants. And it's like Gary said, we don't do that, but we did when the silicone breast implants came out. That caused personal injury to a number of women, to millions of women throughout the nation, and our firm did represent about, I think, 40 or 50 women. And I was involved in going to the seminars and learning everything and getting recovery for them.
Hey, Don, we got a break coming up. Can you hang with us? Because I got a couple more comments.
Sure.
Okay, and I want to remind everybody, you know, there's a difference between a class action case and a mass torts case. We do look at mass torts cases. Civil class action lawsuits are a little bit different. We'll get to that after the break. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. You can call us at 303-713-8255, and we're going to answer your questions. We'll be right back. All right, here we go. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. Our law firm is Bell and Pollock. We are injury lawyers, but this show is for you for any legal subject. 303-713-8255, 713-8255. Right before the break, we were talking to Don about class action lawsuits. Don, you still with us?
I am.
All right. Thanks for holding. So what I wanted to cover was, you asked some great questions, and then what I wanted to cover is, it depends on what side of the fence you come down on. So let's look at the facts. Yes, some people say, wow, the attorneys made all this money. And then so the other people on the other side of the fence say, well, that's the only way you can hold anybody accountable because nobody's going to sue for $23 that they got cheated on. And during the break, I just pulled up one from Walmart, and it was dealing with Huggies pull-ups. And their app, Walmart's app, said they would sell them for X dollars. And when the lady went to the store, they sold them for like $29.97 more. And so that's not worth it to make a legal action, but it is worth it on the class action lawsuit. And one more point on the attorneys. So as Brad said, there's many, multiple attorneys working on these cases. And I think one thing that people don't realize, and you brought it up at the very beginning, is what about this discovery? You think those companies, once a lawsuit is certified, a class action lawsuit, you think they just automatically turn over all these documents and names and contact information and the prices and the defective product and the testing and the engineering and the quality control? So there's a huge, huge legal fight behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm. And that takes a lot of effort and money, presumably, to get that done.
Takes a lot of effort and money.
Right. And there's
I recognize I'm not writing any checks, and this work's all being done behind the scenes. So I think it's a matter of... If the attorney takes the case and they make out big, it's a matter of jealousy or envy that somebody made out big and you got maybe diddly squat as a result.
That might be a good point, but one other thing is I think a lot of people don't know we don't do that kind of class action work, but a lot of people don't realize that these attorneys sometimes put hundreds of thousands of dollars out of their pocket on costs on the case because you're not going to be charged with the cost. Yeah, and so... That's another factor.
Well, plus they're paying attorneys in their law firm, they're paying clerks, and they're paying people in their law firms to carry out the case and waiting for the money to come in. If they have a good class action lawsuit, they're not gambling as much as we might think because they know there's going to be something at the end. But it's a matter of how do you police some of the things that are going on with respect to big companies. And, you know, we have laws that are out there, but we also have our common law system. And the situation that arises is that if you didn't have the ability, yes, some of these lawyers end out, you know, I was down in the mass torts program just recently, and mass torts are different than class action. We do handle some mass torts cases. But, you know, some of the attorneys I was down in Florida, some of the attorneys were coming in their yachts to the seminars, and I'm going, oh my gosh, you know, they're not doing too bad when they're bringing their yacht in. And as a matter of fact, one of the attorneys that had done very well in his cases, and I applaud him for it, I'm happy for him, but he did a night for everybody to come get on the yacht and enjoy the night. And
then some of us, like Bell and Pollock, show up on our horses.
Yes, we show up in our covered wagons.
Right.
But
I'd ask you if I could, then we may or may not have the time for it. How is a person going to look and understand wording, particular wording in a contract? Because in this case, it's manufacturing defect. I want to understand what that means. And I think the answer is you have to look at the whole contract, the whole agreement, and see what's the context to help understand what those two words would mean. To get one sentence read over by an attorney, how does a guy do that? You know, it's hard to pay a guy what his time's worth and his knowledge is worth to say, yep, this is what it says, or nope, that's what it says.
You know, that's a great question. It is. It's an incredible question because that's why a lot of people don't want to hire attorneys. Unbelievable. But, Don, you just fed right into our wheelhouse. I swear to you, we've been doing the show for years. That's what we do the show for. People can come here and ask us, and it's free. And of course, you know, there's a limit to what we can do for free, obviously, but we try to help everybody. And that's, call us up. We read the lawsuit. People fax us documents. They fax us leases. They fax us the contract. And we do something about it. So, there is a place right here.
Right. And And Don, the way it works is this. You call us up and say, hey, will you look at this? We say, yeah, we look at it. We then do the research to find out if there's any cases going on, if there is a mass tort litigation or a class action case going on. We then get in touch with, we get in touch with the people who are handling them. We give them that set of circumstances.
Well, let me jump in if I could.
Yeah.
In fact, indeed, you have. Sam has begun action on my behalf.
Okay, great.
With your company. And the small matter is I'm trying to understand an area that we didn't focus on, so it's not to waste his time. And this manufacturing defect question, I'd love to try to get a hold of him again and specifically point to that one thing and ask him about that. And then in the other general thing for the audience and myself is if the contract's written somehow vague or not clear, heard often it's stated that a judge will rule in favor of the plaintiff because of that and rule in favor of and interpret the contract in favor of the plaintiff. Because it's not written clearly, it's almost intentionally vague.
Man, you are right. You've done your homework. Good job. So yes. So
I listened to Bill and Pollock.
Okay. Well, you've done a great job. So, and Sam, we'll get a hold of Sam and we'll get your number and we'll get that interpreted for you. No problem. Okay. But back to your question. Yeah. And there's an old axiom of contract law, and that is that the contract language is construed most strictly against the drafter of the document. And that's where the law comes from, and judges do enforce it. It could be an insurance contract. Let me ask you something, Don. Do you get a choice when you do your car insurance? Here's the contract. I'd like to change something? No.
No.
Absolutely not. No.
Dirty deal on this one.
Exactly. You buy a car. I was buying a car, and I said to the guy, I said, what if I don't sign this arbitration agreement? He said, you don't get the car.
Well, I didn't sign the arbitration agreement.
but boy, are you right on. Way to go. So do you mind if we get your number one more time and we'll have Mr. Randles give you a call?
We'll have Kevin get
great.
It.
Great. Thanks, guys.
All right, bud.
Hey, I'm going to put you on hold. Thanks, Don. Okay, appreciate it. We're here for you. You, right there with your coffee, your breakfast, your bagel. You're just waking up. We're here for you.
You know, Gary, that was an excellent call.
It was.
And Don did a great job talking to us about it. But I want people to understand, sometimes trial lawyers and the potential of a class action lawsuit or mass tort litigation, sometimes they strike more fear in the board of directors of large companies than the government does as far as what might happen. And I don't mean to say that wrong. I'm just saying they recognize that they not only have responsibilities, board of directors, to the governmental entities and the government laws, but they also have responsibility to the general public. And the purpose of the mass tort and the class action lawsuits are they're met by lawyers willing to go out and work on a contingency basis on a percentage, taking the gamble that the case will come into something that's going to make some money for them.
Which they don't always win, and then they get zero, nothing.
That's right. And for as many class action lawsuits in my days that I've seen succeed, I've seen that many fail too. But the thing is that I want everybody to understand that if they think they have something like the Zantac or the Johnson & Johnson or the
Esure
or any of those things and the opioids and stuff, they need to get a hold of a lawyer. And even if the lawyer doesn't do class action, our firm, we don't do class actions. We have been involved in them, though.
Yep.
And we've gotten our clients to people who do them, and we've monitored them on behalf of our clients to make sure they're taken care of. And that's the same thing we do with mass torts. If you think you've got a claim, if you're sitting on TV and watching on TV or seeing about some kind of lawsuit, don't walk away from that. You need to get a hold of a law firm, have the law firm get you in touch with people who are doing that kind of work, and get the process going.
And we can do that. We do our own, and we also co-counsel with other lawyers. I mean, it's simple as like hernia mesh cases, et cetera, on and on. But just for a second, let's draw back the curtain. Act one, curtain draws back. It's a boardroom. There's the board of directors and the CEO. And they're discussing a marketing strategy on a product or service. And they say, well, this might not be exactly correct, but what's going to happen? What's the risks if we do it? What are the risks? And if the answer is, well, there are no risks, nobody's going to do anything about it, let's go for it. Think about that a minute. All right, you're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Today at 10 o'clock, our KOA Champions of the People Injury Show. Our subject today, you're going to love it. Why are there so many injury lawsuits? Why are there lawsuits? And then when you file an injury lawsuit, insurance companies call you greedy, and they call your lawyers greedy, and they call Gary and Brad greedy. You're greedy. You want money for injuries. Listen to our show today, KOA, 10 to 11, every Saturday, 10 to 11. Bell and Pollock, Champions of the People. We'll be right back. Here we go. Get ready. Fasten your seatbelt. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. You can call us at 303-713-8255, 713-8255 right now. And also join us live is Eric from Caitlin's. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning. How are you guys doing today?
Hey, Eric, you want to talk English or you want to talk Spanish this morning?
let's try
a little Spanish. Que está pasando desayuno?
Oh, you got me.
What's happening for breakfast over there?
We got all kinds of things happening for breakfast. We'll start with the breakfast special. That's going to be our steak Benedict. We're going to do a toasted English muffin with a sirloin steak cooked to the temperature of your choice with a couple of poached eggs, some hollandaise, some fresh baby spinach with that. Put that on top of that, a little bit of paprika on top of that. You can get a side of hash browns with that if you'd like. That will be the breakfast special all week, guys. And then our nacho plate, like I talked about last week, is our lunch special. That's blue and yellow tortilla chips with jalapenos, green onions, black olives, diced tomatoes, lettuce, tomato, guacamole, sour cream, all the fixings on that. Come on down and check that out, guys. And don't forget, every Monday through Friday from 6 to 10 a.m. is the early bird special. Couple of eggs, hash browns, ham, bacon, or sausage as an option with that. That's a really good special. Come down and check that out. All kinds of other things in Spanish and English on the menu, so come on down and check us out.
So Eric, on Friday.
All right, I guess we got the Spanish segment of the show going right now.
We got the snow flying. We got it cold as heck. We got everything coming in. I come in the restaurant, and you got all sorts of people there.
It was tons of people. Yeah, people love it. Come on down, check us out. Fresh-made products, consistent products, decent pricing. Absolutely, they come in anytime they want.
But there was no one on your deck, Eric.
And there's not going to be anybody on the deck today, I don't think so.
I
just don't see that happening.
But it's fantastic inside. It's nice and warm, and it's a nice atmosphere.
I love your beans, and I love your green chili sauce. So there you go. I've said it. There you go.
There you go. And guys, don't forget, there's no pork in that green chili. Everybody asks all the time. Everybody puts pork in the green chili. We don't do that. We make red and green from scratch here. So absolutely. And buttermilk pancakes from scratch. All kinds of house-made products here, guys.
Okay.
Looking forward to it.
What's your location? What's your address? Let's speak English here. Come on.
Okay, this is going to be English. 4379 East Mississippi Avenue. That is one block east of Colorado Boulevard. That is the Glendale Shopping Center. That is across the street from the Rugby Park. We talk about those guys all the time. I'm sure they'll be in today in their shorts like I am. So come on down and check us out, guys. You'll love it, everybody, by the way.
Rock and roll. Here we go.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks, Eric. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. You can call us for free right here. And I'll tell you what, you know, we'll talk to you. We try to solve your problem the best we can in on the air in our law firm every week, week in, week out. But if we can't solve it, we get you to an expert outside of our area of expertise to help you with your problem. And we don't charge for that. That's free. We don't have a list we pick from. We don't have anything like that. We don't get any money for it. We do it for you. And right now, we're going to talk to Anna. Good morning, Anna.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I think I have a pretty quick question.
Okay.
I have an elderly mother who quitclaim deeded her house to me about 3 years ago. And the reason why she did it is because I have a brother who reaches into her pocket quite often. And it was family dynamics that caused her to quitclaim deed the house to me. So fast forward to today, to 2020,
okay.
And she's now trying to sell the house. she chose the real estate agent for the house, but the real estate agent said because I was on the quitclaim deed that she had to do the negotiations with me. So I went ahead and signed the real estate agreement with her. Well, we don't really care for her as our representative, so we thought that if I would quitclaim deed the house back to my mom, that it would void that real estate contract with that agent, and that now a new agent could come into the picture, because then I would quitclaim it back to my mom. Is that kind of circling around a lot? I think I made my question clear.
You made it perfectly clear. What a great question this morning, Nana. So let's break it down to its components, okay? That's always the way we got to do legal stuff. We get down to the very details. So, all right, you got the quitclaim deed, and you know, if I'd have been talking to you before you signed the contract with the broker, I would have you quitclaim deed the property back to your mother, because now you might face the tax consequences of this thing going through. That's a side note, okay? Because you're the owner. You're the owner, and you can't say it was really my mother's property because you're the owner in the quitclaim deed. Period. Now, so. You had the quitclaim deed. You entered into the agreement with the real estate broker, correct?
Correct.
All right. So now, instead of having an executory contract, we have an executed contract, which means it's a fait accompli, which means the contract exists. So therefore, since it exists, you can't really take any action to destroy the contract. That way, there are other ways to approach the contract, which we're going to take a look at for you, right?
Right.
I mean, before we're all done with you, we're going to see your documents and help you further. But you can't just enter into a contract becomes an executed contract, meaning it's done. Everybody signed it. Now we need to look for the performance of the contract and then say, oh, King's X.
Yeah, Anna, you're bound to that contract. Now, I want to see the contract. I think we can help get you. In a situation where if you don't like this particular real estate agent or you don't think they're doing their job or what they're supposed to be doing, that you can change agents, get a different person to sell the house. We can go over details off the air as far as what the reason is and what you're looking at.
And the strategies.
And the strategies that need to be done. I'm going to tell you that, you have a situation that can be remedied, I believe. Because I believe that most real estate agents are willing to work with people and get that done. And if you find out that the personalities don't work, or you don't like the way they're working, or you don't like what they're doing, you can get things resolved. You have a real estate agent that's going to be on the show just after us that's coming on. And two guys that work very hard for that kind of stuff that we work with all the time, Larry and Barry, and we'll be able to help you. But it won't resolve the problem by doing another quitclaim deed.
No,
and that's not the way to.
That's just going to compound the problem. Okay.
Okay.
So
okay.
You're not going to want to do that. But Brad is so correct. There's a way to do it. You know the easiest way to do this. The easiest way.
I'll pick the easiest way.
Is to sit down and talk to the real estate agent. Say this isn't working. And we want to end this deal, and but you got to end it in the right way. But that's the easiest way. Request permission.
My part two of my question were the tax ramifications, because if I go to closing and sign all the documents, but the money is wired to my mom, is that gonna be a repercussion for me tax wise, or is it gonna be messy again?
Well, where the money gets transferred or wired probably won't matter, but the person selling the house may have to have and show their basis in the property, and if they're making a gain, they may have a real estate gain, and that could be a taxable gain. So that's one of the things I want to do with you as far as the transfer. A quitclaim deed is a transfer of all rights and interests that your mom made to you. There were certain reasons behind it, and whether or not we can carry forth her basis. But you have your own house too, I would imagine.
Yes, I do.
Okay, so there are special rules out there about a person being able to sell their house and being able to sell if they're doing it for what purpose and why they transferred the interest and whether or not they get a tax-free sale or whether or not they have a basis in the house that allows them to avoid huge amounts of taxes, whether they're rolling over the house, and whether it's their own personal residence. So as Gary said, we may want to be taking a look. And one of the reasons you should be a little upset with your realtor is your realtor didn't talk to you about any of this. Before the realtor went out and put this thing on the market, recognizing that there had been a quitclaim deed for other purposes than a legitimate transfer of the property and the sale of the property, the realtor should have talked to you about the tax consequences and should have taken the action necessary to give you the best tax position. And we can help you with that. That's another thing that, you know, we can help you with it, and the two guys coming up on the next show can help you with that.
But I got to tell you, my take still is you're the record of owner, Anna. You're selling it.
Okay.
And I'm not sure, you know, I think you can stand on your head and scream all day long if you want, but I think the title company, when they close, it's going to send you the tax document saying you got the money, it's your taxable event, and so have a nice day, okay? And you can say, well, no, really, I was just holding this for my mother. But okay, then the question would be, where are the documents? Well, there's no other documents. There's just a quitclaim deed. Well, a quitclaim deed is effective for transferring title. It has limited warranties, another question. But so it does transfer title. So I'm really worried about you going through this transaction and the taxable consequences, and you don't really even like the realtor or broker you're working with. So if you don't mind, we can put you on hold and take your information. And yeah, we'll be glad to help you. Is that going to be okay?
Sure, that's fine.
Right, because we have to look at it. There is the $250,000 profit that is tax-free if you've owned and lived in the house for 5 years. So we might have to reconstruct some of this and see what we can do. So
okay, Anna, we're going to help you. I'm going to put you on hold, and thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Don't forget about the show that follows our show, right? The Consumer Real Estate Show. Consumer... Barry and Larry, they've got interesting topics, interesting guests. They can handle these questions. And by the way, there's been changes to the basic, you know, form real estate contract recently. And I bet they know about those. If you have questions, call them. Bell and Pollock, champions of the people, for a reason. We'll be right back. You knocks me out off my feet. Boom, boom, boom. All right, here we go. Fasten your seatbelt. Grab your legal coffee, your legal bagel. We're ready to talk law. This is a Law Talk Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. Our law firm is Bell and Pollock. Our website is championsofthepeople.com. And today, 10 to 11, our one-hour-long Champions of the People Injury Show in KOA, 8:50 a.m. every Saturday, 10 to 11 o'clock. Today, we're talking about why are there so many injury lawsuits? Why are there injury lawsuits to begin with? What goes on behind the scene to cause a lawsuit to be filed? And whose fault is it? And what does the picture look like when you pull back the curtain on Act 1 and Act 2 and Act 3? Right? And what happens in the end with the verdict? Why are there so many lawsuits? Today, 10 to 11, the Champions of the People Injury Show, the only show of its kind. So, we talk law here. We're going to talk law with Bob. Good morning, Bob.
Yes, I have a question about the Monsanto lawsuit.
All right, let's go.
From what I understand, they're about to settle this for like $10 billion. But I was wondering how they're going to pay out all the victims when there's so many victims. And like, I know someone that died from it, and I was just wondering, are they going to get the short end of the stick on this or what?
Okay, so the Monsanto lawsuit, you know, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, right? Correct? That's what it caused. And then there was a big fight about whether or not it was carcinogenic or whether it could cause cancer or might cause cancer, and there was experts on both sides. And so, yes, the Monsanto lawsuit happened. Okay. So now if you're a member of that mass torts action, MDL action, then you're going to get paid. How does that work? So So a lot, they agree. Finally, the attorneys and Monsanto's attorneys agree on a sum of money, whatever it is. All right. And so then it has to be, it has to go through the court system, because there's a judge appointed to manage MDL cases in certain areas, like there might be one in Philadelphia, one in Dallas, Texas, one in Denver, one in L.A. And so their area, their lawsuit, you have a lump sum of money. And so the money's paid, and then it's monitored and decided how it's going to get distributed to the various victims. Is that your question, or am I missing something?
No, I don't. Like, if somebody died from it, is it different than from someone that just is surviving from it? Would the payout be more for someone that died? That's my question.
I see. Well, okay. So some of that depends. Some of that depends on state law and when they died and the provability factor. But let's say you can prove it. So the non-Hodgkin's lymphoma caused by the Monsanto product, as alleged, caused the death. Let's say that. Let's assume that. Then I can't tell you if they're going to get paid more or less. I can tell you that it's going to be evaluated. You got a lump sum of money and thousands of claimants. And so just because there's a death doesn't necessarily mean you get a different sum of money than if you're living. Some judges think that when you pass away, then it's not worth as much money as if the person is still living with the issues, right?
Right. So the first thing that has to happen is, are you in a position that you would want to make a claim, or someone you know wants to make a claim?
No, I have someone I know that died from it.
Oh,
okay.
And,
so,
and she had, they had like receipts and everything from the Roundup that they bought, and all the medical records from Texas Cancer Hospital and all that. And I was just wondering. I mean, I was just wondering how they value the cases. That's all I was wondering.
Okay. Well, yeah. So go ahead, Brad.
I'm going to say that person needs to make a claim, or their heirs or the people to the estate need to make a claim.
Yeah, they already did. They got a lawyer and all that. I was just wondering how they're going to do the payout, if you knew anything about that kind of thing.
Normally, and we can find out more for you, there will be a schedule that they'll do, and they'll pursuant to the schedule, they'll be figuring out how much they're going to pay for different injuries that occurred to different people. And because the Roundup, the amount of money that goes into the settlement is can be limited. Now, normally these type of agreements include the fact that Monsanto might have to add more money in depending on the number of creditors,
right,
or number of claimants. They'll have to put more money in, and so your friends going or the people who experience the loss of a loved one are going to be able to put in their amounts or put in what happened, and they're going to be able to recover based on the injuries. And it's going to be probably in, at first there's going to be a predetermined schedule, and that schedule is going to identify what they can get, what a person gets based on the injury and the medical bills and what happened. And if you want to get outside that schedule, now, you know, you should be able to look that up without much problem. And if they're in it, their attorney should be able to tell them how much that's.
Further, there's no set formula, Bob. I mean, there's no set formula, because in this group of people that's going to get this lump sum of money, there might be, you know, 80% of them still living that have medical bills in the future, and then your death case is sad and might be viewed and probably will be viewed differently, but there's no set formula.
Yeah, but $10 billion divided between like over 43,000 people or more, I don't think they're going to get very much. So I don't know. There's probably more victims than that. So,
well, I can guarantee you there's more victims than that. I've spoken to several of them, and they were going to get involved, and then something happened in their family, which I'm not allowed to say, and then they didn't get involved. So I can tell you certainly there's more victims.
Well, But when you say it's not going to be very much, you're probably looking between five and six figures, though. So depending on what happens, you can be as high as six figures. Now, are you going to get to seven into the millions? Probably not. But
the lawyer is going to get 40%. So that's the agreement they signed. So,
well, that's as we said before, and some people don't like that, some people do. But there's not just one lawyer. There's lawyers.
Yeah,
yeah. There's a lot of them.
See, if your friend, let's say you bring it to a lawyer in Colorado, and the lawyer in Colorado is then going to The lawyer in Colorado is going to get some of the lawyers in the mass torts litigation to start talking. And so, and the mass tort litigation lawyer is going to say to the lawyer in Colorado, get me the following information that they're going to want with regard to when they were taking it, because you're still going to have to tie it into it being the result of the Roundup or the exposure to the Monsanto product, because
they keep on canceling the trials. They don't want it. They were having one scheduled in St. Louis. They canceled it, and they told all the reporters to go home and stuff. And I don't know what's going on. I'm pretty sure they're working on a settlement.
I think they are working on a settlement. But I want everybody to understand this one thing, that when you see these mass tort cases, and Bob's talking about a mass tort here and this and that, and who wins, and the lawyers get this much money, and the people get that. I want everybody to understand a couple of things. One of the most important considerations to these companies that are sued on these products, it could be Esure, it could be Monsanto, it could be anything, is whether or not it's going to affect their stock price. So, Bob, we got to go. We're up against the wall in time.
Let's get your number. We can talk to you off the air.
I'm going to put you on hold, all right?
Oh, call back.
All right, the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Don't forget about our Champions of the People Injury Show today, 10 to 11, every Saturday, 10 to 11, KOA. Today we're talking about, why are there so many injury lawsuits? Why are there injury lawsuits to begin with? I mean, if you caused an accident, did you want to get sued? No. Right? How does this work? Listen to our show today, 10 to 11, and we're going to explain it all to you. Go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. All of our books are there. There's 6 books. They're free. Go download an e-copy free, or you can call us at our law firm. We do all this, and we give you this information because we are your champions of the people. See you next week.